This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Wow. What's up? I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you. From daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Payne and Pendergast with you. We are live in West Palm Beach, Florida. Astros, Mets. We will be in Port St. Lucie today for that. Be following us on social media, both the station and our individual social medias as well.
Yeah. We might see some Juan Soto today, maybe.
Maybe.
Possibly.
Yeah.
I don't know.
We should know the Astros lineup soon, which I'm guessing means we should know the Mets lineup soon.
Who's a better baseball player, Juan Soto or Cam Smith? Go.
Cam Smith so far in spring training, Seth.
That's all I can go on. Hey, what have you done for me lately? That's what I like.
Totally, man. That's this society these days.
I think he's more cost effective in terms of spring training.
Got a cooler mom.
Yeah.
For sure.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
I've never even talked to Juan Soto's mom. She wouldn't even give me the time of day.
She wouldn't take my calls.
Whereas, like Cam Smith, we had a delightful conversation with Cam Smith's mom and her friends.
It was so pleasant.
It is my favorite. It's so much fun. That's one of my favorite things about training camp with the Texans is seeing some of the parents and just seeing how, of the rookies, and just seeing how excited they are. And I told you, CJ's mom, you know, her son played at Ohio State. He's been in big moments and everything. And a lot of parents are like this. Their kids have played at big-time schools, but this is the NFL.
Yeah.
And it's so kind of mind-bending in a lot of ways that you can see how they're just wide-eyed about the whole experience.
Well, Will Anderson's family, too.
Yeah.
You know, with his parents and all the sisters and everything. And apparently they've become friendly with the Strouds.
Yeah.
You know, like, it does have a collegial feel to it in a way, you know?
Well, and so with Cam Smith's mom, think about that. He was playing college ball this time last year. So this is his first spring training. So this is the first time she got to see him in a major league uniform and do all that and being like, it's a little miniature major league experience when you go out there. They're wearing the Astros uniforms and you're playing against actual major leaguers for them, you know, at least half of them. It's mind bending.
And he's living in his house that he grew up in.
Yeah.
And so he's going, do you think he goes home in his uniform? Like, he pulls into the driveway.
She does his laundry.
Do you think that she drives him home in the back seat? Like, they stop on the way home?
Stop for McDonald's.
Yeah, like a Happy Meal, but like 7 Happy Meals.
I wonder if when he got up in the morning the first day, he like forgot what his routine was and he just went out and waited for the bus.
Yeah.
He's just sitting out there with
why is Cam standing at the end of the driveway?
Bag and his backpack.
Yeah. It's got his uniform on, Astros ball cap.
I bet
cap.
He drives himself there, but it would be cooler if his mom drove him.
And he was in the back seat.
Yeah, and dropped him off.
Have a good day, sweetie.
Have a good day at baseball school.
Yeah, have fun at baseball school.
My friend in college used to drop me off, and my roommate, he had a car and I didn't, and he'd always drop me off and say, have a nice day at college.
That's what I always do whenever I drop any of my buddies. At college.
Did I have a nice day at college? It always made me laugh every time.
That's funny. Yeah, right. It was always funny.
Have a great day at college, Seth.
That's funny. Nick Caserio and the Texans are in Indianapolis. We're here in West Palm Beach thanks to Exclusive Furniture and Academy Sports and Outdoors. The Texans are in Indianapolis trying to find the next generation of Houston Texans. How does the team view the draft. What's their philosophy? How do they view roster building? Caserio answered a lot of questions about that yesterday in Indianapolis, and he said something to the media yesterday that he said to Seth and I many times in our conversations.
We heard it first.
Yeah.
We hit that first, yeah.
Sorry, national media. But here's Caserio talking about the windows.
We've talked about this. We look at the team building kind of in a two-year kind of window. Our 25, 26, where are we? What can we do? It doesn't mean, well, if we don't do, if we don't win enough games in that 2 years, then we're going to blow everything up. So just trying to be strategic, trying to make good, smart decisions along the way. You have to understand you're going to draft, you're going to have young players. Okay, if you're going to keep young players, okay, other players are going to have to roll off. So what's that balance? That's kind of the game that everybody's kind of playing.
And Nick is heading into, like, the rush hour traffic of that now.
Well,
with Stingley potentially this year and with CJ and Will potentially next year.
Well, and I think the other part of it too is that's where you start to get in a little bit of the best player available discussion about taking it. And this is where I like the way Nick operates because it's a lot easier. It's a lot easier to figure out his strategy in terms of best player available, because the way it usually works is teams say, no, we take the best player available, and then lo and behold, it seems like most teams take a player in a position of need. Nick, I think, has specific groups of players that he likes. He'll talk about his bands of players and everything, but because he's so active trading up and down, I think it's lots of times he's putting himself in a position to where he'll be able to take the best player available at that spot happens to be one of the position groups that they need.
Yeah.
And in an ideal world, that's how it works out. If you can't maneuver, that's when it might end up being more like, all right, hey, Blake Fisher or whomever else, that's the best player available. You can always use more good young prospects, so you take that guy. And because he's so fluid, it's really hard to mock draft the Texans because I don't think – what are the chances he stays at 25?
I would say less than 50-50.
Yeah.
He moves around so much.
Yeah.
And I'm not even – he can move up or down. I'm not even saying trade back.
Yeah.
You know, like, he could – they may – now, if they trade up, it'll be the night of the draft. You know, there'll be a guy slipping, and they'll – if they trade back, I think, that's more about accumulating. Like, trading back is more of a, like, leading up to the – like, the days before the draft,
yeah,
just trying to accumulate picks. Moving up, unless you're moving up to, like, one or two to go get a quarterback – that's something more that probably happens on the night of the draft.
Remember the big surprise for every – that's the other thing that happens every year too, is if you try to gauge or anticipate exactly how the trades are going to go. You know, Nick said last year when they traded for Stephon Diggs and when they were in the second round, they thought it was going to be easier to trade back up in the first round than it was. And a lot of – that was the common experience of a lot of teams last year. All of a sudden, like, man, teams are having a hard time trading up within the first round or up into –
yeah, you got to find a trade partner, man.
Yeah. So I don't know. I'm greedy. I want a first-round pick.
Well, what are the times – like, the times where – I think the only times that really matter to fans that teams are drafting for need versus best player available are probably the first 2 days of the draft.
Yeah.
Like, by the time you're drafting on day three, I really do feel like you're going best player. You're talking scratch-off tickets.
Well, I know a lot of teams do start to go more for need at the middle rounds because it is a scratch off, and that, like, there's less distinction between,
right,
all right, how do we actually say who's the best – the best player available in the fourth round when it's such a wild card.
No, for sure. I guess in terms of, like, fans getting emotionally getting emotionally moved one way or the other about it, because I think of, like, I think of two when I think of Nick. Two picks, and they were both on day two. But his very first pick as the Texans GM, Davis Mills.
Yeah.
You know, like, that
widely lambasted.
Widely lambasted for picking Davis Mills. And I think, like, the Davis Mills pick to me has worked out fine. He's your backup quarterback.
Because the whole problem with that was it was the first pick you had in the draft.
Yeah.
And people, there were some people on the outside, like, remember Rich Eisen acting like they already have a quarterback. His name's Deshaun Watson.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, way to stay dialed in on the news cycle, yeah. Rich Eisen.
Yeah.
So I think the biggest thing immediately post draft, the grades, both emotionally and the fans and then the people giving the grades, we're thinking in that regard because you want to look at it. And in your mind, you're like, oh, yeah, this guy's going to start at defensive tackle. And then this draft pick will definitely start at tight end. And it's easier to put the fantasy together in your brain.
Yep.
So, when they drafted a quarterback in the third round, which is dicey always, it felt like, wait, no, I'm trying to build this team in my brain here.
For a team that needed everything.
Yeah.
You know, for a team that needed everything. And then the other one, obviously, is Blake Fisher last year.
Yeah.
That was a big curveball.
I mean, the biggest mistake we all make emotionally after the draft is you, in your mind, the first six picks, you think of them like, oh, that guy's definitely starting.
Yep.
Oh, sure, yeah. He'll at least he'll rotate in a defensive tackle. And it doesn't work that way.
No, it doesn't. Although DeMeco was pretty clear at his media session a couple days ago, and he's like, if we draft you in the first round, you're expected to be a day one starter.
Well, that's what they're hoping for. That's what they're looking for, is a day one starter.
Yeah.
It does that. Like, that's, I mean, there's a subtle difference there between guaranteeing that he's going to start versus drafting you because we think you can be a day one starter.
Yep.
But then it's a second round pick, it's a 50-50 shot that the guy becomes a full-time starter.
Yep.
Third round, it goes down to about a 33% chance.
Yep. Nick Caserio at the Combine, are you seeing more ready for NFL prospects?
It's case by case. I would see, you've kind of seen the players that have played a lot of football. You know, you're looking at, you know, go through the play history, and some of these players started 40 games, 50 games. You get better at football by playing football. It doesn't mean if you're an underclassman, you've played less games, it doesn't mean you can't be successful. I'd say Nico Collins is a good example in our case, where basically he played 2 years of college football, missed his third year, had some traits that we liked, and I'd say he worked and to put himself in the position that he's in. So I think we're cognizant of the landscape of college football. It doesn't necessarily change our calculus or change about how we go about evaluating players. But when you see them play, you just want to see them play football. And sometimes they're a little bit more physically and mentally ready. Some players are further along. Some players might be behind. It doesn't mean they can't catch up. That's part of our job and responsibility, to create an infrastructure for the players so when they come here, what are the things that they need to be successful? And then that's part of the job of the coaching staff as well, is to put the players in a position to go out there and be successful. So it's definitely evolved. We're certainly aware and cognizant of it, but it hasn't necessarily shifted how we view players.
I think that might be one of the reasons that Nick tends to prefer, or is pretty much exclusively preferred, big school guys, is that, okay, you play against a higher level of competition more routinely and get a lot of reps, you're going to be a better football player on average, and maybe play more immediately. And he's saying that as he's also talking in that other clip about having a 2-year window. Mm-hmm. And the other thing too is, there's just, with the modern CBA, there's just so much less time to practice and work with your players than there used to be.
Yeah.
That one of the reasons Nick might do that might not even be as much about evaluation, is like, okay, on average, these guys are going to be more ready to play in the NFL.
Mm-hmm.
They're just going to be better because they played more tough, highly elite competition. And in a 2-year window, you want these guys to play as soon as possible.
It's probably slightly easier to scout too, I would imagine. Like, it's easier to watch a guy.
You're going against common opponents.
Yeah, like a guy from Georgia going against LSU guys, it's easier to kind of translate like the film and envision in your mind what this guy is like going against NFL. I'm not saying that all college guys are NFL caliber players, but easier than a guy like Gray Zabel against South Dakota State.
No, there's like, if you go to a Division I AA type school or FCS school or something, there's some things that you're going to do well just because you're physically more gifted, but it's hard to tell exactly how that measures up. You know, you don't have a huge sample size of guys playing against that level of competition. There's lots of guys that would look impressive, so it's more speculation.
All right, one more from Caserio here on draft philosophy. This is a good one here. The cost benefit of trading picks for veteran players.
Yeah, there's always a cost. There's an opportunity cost associated with doing something. So, okay, said player, here's a cost associated with them, whether it's a contract, whether it's draft compensation. Do you feel the player is worth that, whatever the opposing team is asking? Trades are always, it takes two to tango. So we could think one thing, they could think another thing. If it matches up, I mean, in the Diggs case is a good example. So we felt comfortable with that. We thought it made sense. We thought it was the right value, so we went ahead and did it. What's going to look like this year? I mean, I'm not sure. So we'll go through this process here. So, again, I think we're very case by case. Look at the situation, take the information in. All right, if we make this decision, what's at the expense of? All right, what are the alternatives? What's the next best option? And that's kind of how we'll approach it.
Takes two to tango, and he tangoed with Brandon Bean on that one.
He did.
What's the tango look like?
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Take me out to the ball game.
What are you doing?
Did you know DirecTV has the most MLB games?
So you're singing?
Yeah, they put your favorite teams front and center right when you turn it on. Buy me some cold cuts and flapjacks.
Those aren't even the words.
I'm allergic to peanuts.
Stream DirecTV, home of the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks. RSNs available with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package.
Hey, I'm Andy. If you don't know me, it's probably because I'm not famous. But I did start a men's grooming company called Harry's. The idea for Harry's came out of a frustrating experience I had buying razor blades. Most brands were overpriced, overdesigned, and out of touch. At Harry's, our approach is simple. Here's our secret. We make sharp, durable blades and sell them at honest prices for as low as $2 each. We care about quality so much that we do some crazy things, like buy a world-class German blade factory. Obsessing over every detail means we're confident in offering a 100% quality guarantee. Millions of guys have already made the switch to Harry's, so thank you if you're one of them. And if you're not, we hope you give us a try with this special offer. Get a Harry starter set with a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, shave gel, and a travel cover. All for just $3 plus free shipping. Just go to harrys.com and enter code FLEX at checkout. That's harrys.com, code FLEX. Enjoy.
What, the dance, the tango?
Yeah.
I don't know.
It feels like it's like a sexually charged dance, isn't it? It's a lot of like
tango.
Dramatic.
Is a lot of action, I think.
It's passionate.
Yeah.
So I like when NFL, big tough guy NFL guys talk
about. Nick Caserio.
Hey, it takes two to tango.
Right.
Get on over here and put on your dancing shoes.
Come on, Brandon. Let's go. Let's tango.
Got my tightest dress on.
Let's tango, baby. Yeah.
Yeah, he's going to trade. There will be a trade sometime in the next 3 weeks.
Really?
I don't know. When's the draft? Sometime between now
late
and
April. Free agency, I think Nick dropped March 10th, I think, is the date free agency starts.
Yeah.
That'll be.
So we've got 2 months. We've got about 2 months before the draft.
Yeah.
There will be at least one trade between now and then.
There are a lot of guys available, man. I mean, we were talking about them yesterday. You know, available via trade.
Yeah.
Harold Landry has permission to go find a trade. We poured cold water on that for the Texans for obvious reasons. They don't need an edge rusher. Jonathan Allen's intriguing. Any of the wide receivers are intriguing. We workshopped a Garrett Wilson trade yesterday, and I came up with a scenario where they just basically rent him for a year.
Yeah.
They get a one-year lease on Garrett Wilson.
How did the text line respond to that? Because I felt like you were trying way too hard on that one. You had a grand plan to trade for Garrett Wilson and then trade him away next year.
My grand plan wasn't to definitely do that. It was merely pointing out that is an option if you do trade for him. You don't have to pay him.
Right.
You know,
you don't have to give him that big contract.
You don't have to give him that big. Now,
there's a lot of moving parts there. If he has a disappointing season, if he gets injured.
Yeah,
you know,
Now, if he's agitating for a contract already, then I don't want to trade for him.
That's the most annoying.
If he's open to coming, if he just wants to get the hell out of New York, which is definitely on the board, I would say, and especially he's coming to a team that has C.J. Stroud, his former teammate, then he may not be agitated. He may feel like, okay, I'm going to go here and have a big year and get paid by somebody.
This is where the NFL players have to get together. The NFLPA has to look at the way baseball does it, where the guaranteed contracts aren't because the CBA says they'll be guaranteed. It's because that's the precedent. But one of the things that keeps owners feeling comfortable about it is that guys don't agitate for new contracts, or generally it's rare that they agitate for a trade.
Yeah.
So when you trade for a player, he's going to come and he's going to play for you. When you give a guy a contract, he's going to play that contract out. And NFL players will whine and complain about not having guaranteed contracts. Like, for one, it's just a different sport and the injuries are a lot bigger. But two, we've gotten into this zone where all of a sudden teams are having to renegotiate with guys all the time.
Yeah.
And as a former player myself, the tends to side with players on contract disputes. Now I'm getting annoyed. Now I'm just, it's just
too
much.
A deal.
This expectation that, yeah, like, well, now I get a new deal. No. Like, you just use, if it's your rookie deal, that's a whole different scenario because your hands are tied.
Right.
But when you sign,
when you're
a free agent, yeah, and you have a choice in the matter and you sign that deal, I'm like, yeah, just play out the freaking deal.
Yeah.
If the team comes to you and wants to do more, so, but they don't threaten a holdout or anything on a veteran renegotiation.
Yeah, Tyreek. All right? We're talking to you.
I'm turning to a grumpy old man.
Yeah.
R.I.P. Gene Hackman, by the way.
Yeah, how about that story?
He's 95 years old. He and his wife and his dog were all found dead?
Yes. His wife was in her 60s.
Yeah.
He was 95. And his dog, I don't know how old the dog was, but they were all found dead in their bedroom.
Ian Rappaport is claiming it was just a coincidence.
The
initial report said that it was that there's no foul play suspected. Well, like, okay, I haven't read up on this. If there's no foul play suspected, it sounds like a carbon monoxide leak,
yeah,
or something.
Right?
Like,
I mean,
that.
The dog is a bit of the tell, right?
Like, and even like a 68,
something is up.
Like, wealthy 68-year-old women don't tend to,
yeah,
you know, die in the middle of the night without a pre-existing condition. Yeah, no.
So he was 95. She was 64.
64. So, yeah. Excuse me.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's very weird. And it's a shame because obviously it's also, it's two human lives, but it's Gene Hackman.
It's
who
Gene
everybody
Hackman.
Knows.
I like Gene Hackman. 90, I didn't know he was 95.
Yeah. He hasn't worked in a while,
yeah,
but he was doing so well on into his 80s that people were kind of surprised he wasn't working because I don't think they realized that he was 95 years
right,
old.
Right, right, right.
He's like, let the man retire. Jeez.
What's your favorite Gene Hackman movie?
I guess, The Unforgiven.
The Unforgiven?
Yeah.
Okay.
I know you're going to say Hoosiers.
My three favorites are in no particular order. Hoosiers, the first Superman. He was Lex Luthor in the Superman movies.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
And I thought he was great in The Birdcage with Robin Williams.
Oh, here's the dad in The Birdcage,
right?
He was, right?
Like a very conservative politician.
He's an actual congressman or something,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah. And his daughter is marrying Robin Williams' son,
yeah,
son of a gay couple.
I'll tell you what, Royal Tannenbaum's is up there though too.
Yeah.
And I know you're not a big Wes Anderson guy.
Yeah, I've never
but
seen
his
that.
His character in that is hilarious. The most because he reminded me a lot of my dad. That was 2001. That was a long time ago.
Yeah, like it's like the People magazine article, you know, People does this thing with these articles with,
yeah,
famous people where they refer to them by their name for like the first paragraph. And then for the rest of the article, it's like the French Connection actor. They don't refer, you know, the whole,
yeah,
rest of the article.
They're trying to get like the little tidbits in there,
yeah,
with a link to the French Connection.
And this article mentions at least like 8 or 9 of his movies, and Hoosiers isn't mentioned in here.
Really?
In this People magazine.
They mention the French Connection, but not Hoosiers.
The French Connection, Superman, the Royal Tenenbaums. I have no problem with any of those. Ants. He was a voice in the movie Ants. Back in 1998, he was in the Birdcage was 1996. The Birdcage is almost 30 years old. That's crazy. Welcome to Mooseport. He retired from acting after 2004's Welcome to Mooseport.
That was his final film.
His final film was Welcome to Mooseport. But nowhere
so
does it say.
He hasn't done a film in 21 years.
Right.
Wow.
Yeah.
I didn't realize it's
he will not be
long.
Doing any more. We're done.
I'm just looking at like a career that spanned from 1960. His first credit is Mad Dog Col. Mad Dog Collie? I don't know what it is. In 1961. And then he did a TV series in 1961.
That's a hell of a run, man.
Yeah, man.
That's a hell of a run. Sad story, man. Sad story.
Well, sad that given the circumstances.
Yeah.
I mean, if he passed away and he's 95, then that's...
Oh, yeah, no, 95. 95 is a good run.
Yeah,
yeah, but no, like, but there's... The wife and the dog. Yeah, it's not good. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. All right, I wrote a piece for the Houston Press yesterday about the Astros. 4 upgraded performances that I think can get the Astros from this 86.5 win murkiness that they are right now back to where we're used to having.
Give it to me.
Which of these are most likely?
Okay.
We'll do that coming up next.
From an author. Ooh. Author Sean Pendergast. He wrote something.
Journalist.
No.
Journo.
Hey, sports fans. It's Mason Crosby.
And Reese Crosby.
If you enjoy football, bootball,
be sure to check out Kicking It with the Crosbys. New episodes drop every Tuesday and Thursday.
Subscribe on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.